Hello and welcome to the January edition of On the Horizon, our monthly podcast dedicated to helping you navigate through the tricking world of golf course turf maintenance by helping you to look and think a little further forward. I'm Henry Beshley from ICL.
And I'm Glenn Kirby from Syngenta. Well, Henry, it's January. Will disease pressure disappear? Will there be resolutions for the new year? And would BTME be an opportunity to share a beer?
Very good. Well, I've done one of my own.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so how about will BTME be a time of aspiration with networking and education? Or will it descend into befuddlementation as a result of alcohol intoxication?
I'm not sure that one's going to be in the Scrabble dictionary, Henry. But hopefully BTME will be a positive experience for everyone.
Indeed. But it can certainly go either way, Glenn, or both ways, actually. And then a few more besides, most likely. And I, for one, I'm especially glad at this time to have given up on the drink, Glenn, and all that self-inflicted pain and discomfort that is generally associated with it. I am very happy to step aside these days.
How long's it been now, Henry?
Well, it's coming up to 3 years, Glenn.
And still no signs of improvement?
No. Same old me, Glenn. You just have to take it or leave it. Okay, Glenn, as always, we start with a roundup of the weather data. And this month seems particularly relevant because we've been promising in the last few episodes that things might change in January and that the disease pressure in particular might start to drop. So is this the case, Glenn, or have we been making false promises? Anyway, Glenn, where are you taking us to this month so that we can answer these burning questions?
Okay, Henry, well, this month we are checking out the best places to go for New Year's Eve. And this is according to hostelworld.com.
Oh, great. Good idea, Glenn. I really like hostels. Always full of interesting people, although I'm not sure about a hostel on New Year's Eve. That could go a number of different ways too.
Yeah, it sounds as dangerous as the Wetherspoons at BTME. Yes, Hostel World for all your hosteling needs.
Well, obviously, Glenn, I'm bound to ask, are you after a deal or something here? You know, they're not that expensive. Maybe you should aim a little higher if you want to impress Mrs. K.
Yeah, maybe. She wasn't too impressed with the microwavable mono slipper I got her last year. But what do you get the woman who has everything, Henry?
Yes, yes.
We're off on a tangent already, aren't we?
Yes.
Anyway, yeah, come on, let's stay focused.
Yes, absolutely. Probably best to stay focused, Glenn, on the matter at hand.
Indeed. And I'm offering a public service here. We are this month going to go to Edinburgh, which is the home of the annual Scottish Hogmanay Festival with major concerts, traditional Scottish events and a massive street party. It's fun for all ages, Henry.
Oh, and a lot more besides, I wouldn't wonder.
And then we're off to Llan Glynwyd in Wales, the place to go for unique Welsh traditions. Residents wandering around the town dressed up as giant horse skulls, wearing decorative bells and whistles.
And maybe Welsh cakes?
You would hope so. And then off to Knoll Park down in Sevenoaks in Kent, the best place to go for New Year's Eve if you're an outdoorsy type.
Each to their own, Glenn.
Indeed. And then, of course, Dublin, the party town for Europe.
Yes, indeed. So let's start with the moisture data for those locations. Are there any major developments in January?
Well, same as last month, really, Henry. It is wet. No evapotranspiration to speak of. The days are starting to draw out a little now, but we're still only around about 9 hours of daylight by the end of the month. And that, along with the cooler temperatures we see in January, means we're still only at 20 to 25 millimetres of evapotranspiration for most places now. So probably the third month in a row of guaranteed wet ground.
Okay. So in general, it's probably going to be wet underfoot. But it's also getting colder now, isn't it, Glenn? Just how cold can it get in January?
Well, pretty cold now. All venues have reached about -4 or -5 in this data set, which goes back to 2010.
Okay. So certainly enough to freeze the ground. But is there any chance of milder conditions, you know, to keep that Microdochium patch disease all fired up?
Well, most of these locations have reached 14 degrees at some points in January, so cold weather certainly isn't guaranteed. But in the main, the temperatures in January stay on the cool side.
Okay. But, you know, 14 degrees is certainly mild enough to stimulate some serious Microdochium patch disease activity, especially if it's coupled with leaf wetness.
Yes, it is. But as we always say, the averages are much more helpful here.
Yes, and that can certainly be a lot more useful than focusing on those extremes, especially if we're trying to get our heads around the possible levels of disease pressure.
Okay, so all of the locations are pretty consistent in January for the averages, Henry. They're all hovering between 2 to 3 degrees overnight and reaching a dizzy high of 7 to 8 degrees during the day.
Yes, that feels a lot more like BTME weather. Cold overnight, sneaking down to frosty levels maybe, and maybe not even lifting that much during the day. So the day and nighttime averages are still dropping then.
Yeah, January does seem to be when true winter finally arrives.
Yeah, and it's a bit weird, isn't it? Because last month we were talking about how mild December can be. And of course, last year, some areas of the country went into January with those like overnight temperatures of, what was it, 15 degrees?
It was.
Yeah, so how does it tend to transition then from that into true winter in January?
Well, it's not instant, Henry, but the colder weather is certainly more reliable in January. And you're really absolutely spot on about last year. New Year's Eve for us down south was 15 degrees overnight. But then if you look at the numbers, it dropped off pretty sharpish over that. And if you look over the last few years at the averages that January presents, it comes pretty clear that the kind of the last 2 weeks of January and the first 2 weeks of February, they are the coldest points of the year. So right. If I had to make a prediction based on the historic averages, I would assume from New Year's down to the second week of January, we're on a serious downward turn, down towards some serious cold. But of course, this is the UK, and all we can say is the odds of that happening, they really increase, but we can't rely on it.
No. Okay. So does that cold weather tend to do enough to slow down the march of Microdochium patch disease? You know, and that march has been going on for like, what is it, 4 months now?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. So what are the sub 2 degree stopping hours looking like? And of course, those leaf wetness hours, because just to remind everyone, these are the factors that we've been using to try to understand the likely risk of disease activity or disease making a surge at this time as a result of prolonged leaf wetness coupled with mildish temperatures above 5°C. You know, are the January temperatures getting low enough to significantly slow down the development of the disease?
It's a great question, and there are some interesting numbers here as we travel around the country. So if we go to Dublin first, they see 2.8 hours, kind of 2¾ hours of sub 2 degree hours a day on average, and about 10¼ hours of leaf wetness a day on average.
Okay, well, that feels to me like that one's in the balance. Lots of leaf wetness and not too cold. So that one could go either way.
Yes, it could. You know, they are right at that edge. And warm years, they'll go one way. Cold years, they'll go the other.
Yeah, yeah.
So Knoll Park down in Kent near Sevenoaks, they see 6½ hours on average of sub 2 degree hours a day and 16 hours of leaf wetness on average a day.
Wow. I mean, that's completely different, isn't it? We've got significantly colder periods on average, but also really long periods of leaf wetness. So I'm thinking that might be slightly better than Dublin, but I'm only guessing, really.
Yeah, I think what that tells us is the cold weather is more reliable down in Kent than it is in Dublin.
Yes.
But if you get a mild spell, the leaf wetness is there to really drive it on. So keep an eye on that forecast. Okay, if we go up to Edinburgh, 5 and a little bit hours of sub 2 degree hours a day and 9 hours 45 minutes of leaf wetness a day.
Well, that's a bit of a better balance, isn't it? It's kind of like colder for longer and less leaf moisture going on.
That's right. Okay, Llangwennyd, 5 and a quarter hours a day of sub 2 degree hours. And 16 hours of leaf wetness a day on average.
Ooh, I mean, that's similar to Knoll Park, isn't it? Lots of leaf wetness going on there.
Yeah, it is. And that kind of Wales, South Wales area have had a real challenge running through the last few months.
Have.
So it's great that at last some cold weather tends to arrive to slow things down for them. But, you know, although it's cold normally, we are right in that zone now, aren't we?
So we will hopefully move into some microdoking patch disease stopping or slowing territory in January with the sub 2 degree stopping hours, generally averaging above that 3 hour threshold that we think will help to slow things down. Dublin is borderline, but the other locations are averaging slightly higher. So I think that we can assume that on balance, the temperatures, more than anything, are going to be on our side for a while to help reduce that pressure for a time.
Yeah, absolutely, they will. But these are averages. So there'll be periods when we see blips of heat that will kick disease on. But the chances of them lasting for any period of time are minimal now. This is where, if we are clean of disease going into this period, then we're in a really good position. But if we're not, then that disease we've got can easily tick on when we get those little blips of warm spells. And that's something we're going to discuss later.
Yeah, great. But the leaf wetness, above anything else, is still sky high, isn't it?
It really is. Most of the places around the country are still half of the day with leaf wetness being significantly high.
It's not really a surprise, is it? Because we've only just passed the shortest day, haven't we, in January. Edinburgh seems to have the best chances of catching a break, but South Wales and the South Coast, that's still pretty brutal, isn't it, at 16 hours. So it seems clear that we really are relying on those low temperatures to save us, aren't we, or give us some breathing space. And whilst it has become colder, it's still not that reliable, is it? We can still get up to 14 degrees, as we spoke about earlier, and so we still have to stay in the moment, don't we, and react to those conditions, you know, as they unfold.
Yeah, we do. But you know, if we assume leaf moisture is going to be there and the only danger is warm weather, that's quite an easy one to watch out for in January, Henry.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is when we can settle into colder temperatures. And that is when, Glenn, we get to the end of battle two, don't we?
Hurrah!
Yes. Yeah, and about time too, I think, you know, and we can hopefully dust ourselves down and start thinking about our battle three, or the final battle, Glenn. Disease control strategies. And of course, that will depend on how well we've done during battle two. You know, January is still a tricking time, and like BTME, the weather can go either way as well.
Yeah, we do need to be on our toes and only change tack when the weather settles into true winter. Well, it's that time of year. Growth has pretty much disappeared now, and we've just got to hold on until it comes back.
Yeah, which could begin in March, couldn't it, Glenn, if the weather drops nicely for us for a time?
Could be May, though.
Yeah, or June, I suppose, like it was. Was it last year or the year before? We're just going to have to be patient, aren't we, from now onwards, because it can be a long drag to spring, especially with growth now largely out of our hands for a while.
But what we can do now, Henry, is protect that golf course, you know, and a team that has true focus on protection now can do loads to preserve all that hard work that we've created to date. And we can carry all that through to the spring if we work really hard at it.
Yeah, so what are you thinking, Glenn?
Well, things like moving holes regularly, Henry. We don't want to fall into that habit of only changing holes once a week at this time of year. Keeping ropes moved, just keeping the whole team focused on moving them every day, making sure they're upright. If they get cut, then tie them back up. Use rubber mats at the end of your paths just to spread that traffic around. You know, think about your greenkeeping traffic routes. Greenkeepers on their gaiters and their pro gaiters, they do as much damage as golfers do if they stick to the same track. So really think about traffic routes. Yeah. Keep tee markers moved regularly. You know, think about adopting AstroTurf on weaker tees. Good communication with the membership, educating on the benefits of carrying bags rather than taking trolleys. Thinking about how you rake bunkers. You know, there's no growth on bunker banks at the moment. So where you come out of it when you're raking, there is some wear issues and sand splash. Think about how you can move that around. There is loads you can do at this time of year to protect the golf course if you care enough. And by showing you care and keeping a real sense of pride about what you do in this period goes an awful long way to keep the membership on board.
Yeah, of course. So what is the talk at the bar in January, Glenn? Is it still the usual guff?
Well, generally, from my experience, disgust at the gall of the course manager for limiting buggy and trolley use during super wet periods of frost, you know, usually coupled with a march to the secretary's office to point out that their subscriptions were for 12 months and they've only been allowed to play for 11 months and 27 days. And because they can only play if they take their tour bag out with all of their clubs, you know, a change of clothes and at least 100 pinnacle golds. They don't seem to be capable of carrying all of that because of their arthritis, and they can prove it because they've got a letter from the doctor. And there's also a receipt for the bottle of whiskey they bought stapled to it.
Get it out, Glenn. That's the only way, isn't it, with this kind of stuff? You know, you can't keep it locked in. It does no good at all. Are you okay?
Yeah, I am. I've got a new puppy, Henry. It's keeping me up at night.
Oh, dear. Do you need a power nap?
Yeah. Your mind.
Okay, so let's have a break right now.
No, I'm all right. I can power through. Okay. Look, all in all, Henry, it is a time to protect the golf course. And your team has so much ability here. If they're engaged and they're working at it and you're all working together, it is so important. It carries so much weight with the membership. You know, once your team know the score and understand the value, they become your biggest asset at this time of year.
Yeah, very good.
So, Henry, what are the agronomic risks during January for the UK and Ireland?
Well, Glenn, as we discussed earlier, the climatic or environmental conditions are dominating at this time of year, and they can bring with them some significant agronomic jeopardy, depending on which way it goes.
Yeah, we've reached a low point in terms of light levels and temperatures now. And of course, soil moisture content is ramped right up. And we've got really long periods of duration and high levels of leaf wetness. So it's tricky.
Yes. And so January is a time of poor growing conditions, which could result in turf deterioration in its own right, but even more so when it's subjected to management and play, especially in areas like shaded or poorly drained areas. So attentive management strategies, as you were just saying, Glenn, and sparing maintenance might be the key considerations for this time.
But we might get some help from the weather at times just to ease that disease pressure if it turns cold.
Yeah, the agronomic odds of some beneficial sub-2 degree stopping hours is increasing in January to help slow down the development of microdochium patch disease. And also, let's not forget, potentially helping to limit the level of pest activity. But it's not forced to turn cold, is it? And so if it does turn mild or remain mild, then we might need to extend our battle two strategies that we've been employing in the war against microdochium patch disease. So battle two can drag on at this time. And so we just need to be aware of that, because it would have a significant impact on our agronomic approach to the month.
Yeah, January can still go either way in reality, and disease pressure can remain high, which might mean that you need to keep going with our belt and braces ITM approach, you know, rather than what we've started talking about, which is kind of hinting at that we might be able to ease off a bit. if it does turn cold.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's important that we're alive to that agronomic distinction between a cold and a mild January, because, you know, you don't want to get tripped up by it, do you? You know, if it does turn cold and the disease pressure reduces as a result, then we might be able to shift the emphasis of our management plan more towards a greater reliance on our cultural management of things like plant health, possibly with some nutrition, although maybe not. Leaf wetness through all those various means that we've discussed in the previous months. And of course, the use of iron sulfate, all aiming in conjunction with each other to hold things in check. But if it remains mild, then we might have to keep going with a more fully integrated strategy and be more proactive with the application of fungicide, which I presume will be Medallion at this time, Glenn.
Well, as a general rule of thumb, Henry, yes, a preventative application of Medallion in January would be our default position. But in the event of milder conditions, such as we experienced at the end of December 2021, and that turf is still actively growing, which is very possible, although more unlikely, then preventative applications of Instrata Elite could be a more appropriate and effective choice. It really does depend on the weather conditions rather than a calendar application.
Yeah. Okay. So we really do need to keep our wits about us in January if we're going to make the right decisions. Because, of course, as we repeatedly say, it can drop in different ways, which, you know, will make all the difference for our agronomic approach. And we just don't want to get caught out at this stage, do we? This sort of late stage of battle two, because we're so nearly out of the woods. And it is still a long time to be suffering from disease scarring until recovery starts in earnest next spring.
Indeed. And we're going to go into a bit more depth about our battle-free strategies a little later on. Yeah. Because battle-free strategies really do depend on how well you came out of battle two.
Yeah, it does. And battle three undoubtedly is going to be a long trudge through to spring, isn't it? Because although it might have lower disease pressure generally, you know, we've also got minimal turf growth or recovery going on. And so, I mean, obviously, it'll be a lot easier to navigate without any disease scarring from the outset. And so, yeah, we're going to discuss those different strategies later on, aren't we? Depending on how well we did in battle two, you know, whether we came out unscathed or if we've got some significant scarring going on that will need recovering. But fingers crossed, hopefully, by looking on the horizon, we'll all be, you know, going into battle three in decent shape.
That's right. Life is so much easier during the early part of the year without disease scarring to contend with. But if you do fall into the trap, despite your best efforts, then we will try and help you out. But remember, if you're winning now, just hold on, please, for a bit longer. It's so easy to lose all of that good work over the Christmas period if you're not careful.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Christmas period, as we sort of mentioned last month, that's a huge hurdle to get over, isn't it? It's possibly when the highest level of disease pressure is going on. But look, I'm really looking forward to talking about the onset of Battle 3 later on. So moving on, I presume that our leather jacket grub monitoring strategy that we've also been talking about in previous episodes will also be affected by how the weather drops in January.
Yes, it will. We can continue with our small-scale sheeting monitoring and data gathering if it remains mild. Yeah. But we might have to call it, you know, stop it and put a halt on it if those soil temperatures drop below 4 degrees and those grubs become dormant. But if you can keep going and the weather conditions are there, keep gathering that data, because the numbers will ultimately help you guide your maintenance through spring and hopefully help you prevent any nasty surprises and damaging infestations later down the line. And remember that we want to avoid spiking acelaprin-treated areas if we can with large round tines, if we suspect that we've got an infestation lurking below that acelaprin zone. And we want to make those grubs struggle as much as we can up and down through it.
Yeah, we do. And we discussed that last month, didn't we? And no doubt we will come back to it in the next few months. But definitely keep going with the monitoring, because it will influence you and help you decide what you need to do to minimise any negative impacts on the run-up to spring.
Indeed. And if you have seen some high numbers, then you might want to start considering your sheeting process in January. You know, if January is a bit quieter for you and the weather does break for the milder, then it may be a good opportunity to start knocking those leather jacket population downs a bit earlier, start moving them through that azelaprine zone and helping you get a handle on it before it becomes a problem. Mm. Right, have we got anything else we need to think about, Henry?
Well, snow, Glenn, and potentially frost. They might enter the game in January, mightn't they? And we discussed them last January, didn't we?
We did. I spoke to a number of turf Jedis from around the globe and we came up with a few take-home messages, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Firstly, we wanted to keep a close eye on weather forecast and make sure to preserve plant health and turf quality going into this period. That was really important. And secondly, the enemy was actually ice rather than snow, because it's ice that will suffocate the turf. But you should have a month or so before problems occur if you're dealing with ice. And in the UK, that's not particularly likely. So if snow does occur, then we need to protect important areas from getting trapped under compacted snow, you know, as a result of sledging routes during the winter. I've seen that happen before. And fourthly, snow on frozen ground shouldn't really present as much of a problem, but a covering over unfrozen ground might result in the development of significant disease activity, especially if there is active disease already present at the time of covering. Mm. So, you know, even more reasons to stay focused on battle one, battle two, keeping disease pressure low. And if you are going into that situation, then you might want to take preventative measures to the run-up to that big dollop of snow that you think might stick around for a little while.
Yeah, sort of simple stuff really, isn't it? And in terms of frosts, we just need to make sure that we've got our frost policy in place, don't we, in order to sort of help us prevent any major loss of grass cover in those, by playing on those frozen ground conditions, or when the frost is coming out of the ground. We just need to get agreement on how we best protect the course during these times, rather than leaving it open to argument at the time. And yeah, so the frost policy is important, obviously, for that reason. And of course, we need to also remember that frozen and slippery conditions are health and safety issues, aren't they? And so we need to have our risk assessments fully in place, fully understood and fully adhered to.
Yeah, that's right. We do have a very serious duty of care here to consider.
Yeah, we do. So all in all, January is... Well, we do say this every month, don't we? But it is a really tricky time agronomically, because it can, mainly because it can break a number of different ways, can't it? And so we need to be mindful of mild conditions, because it will impact on our disease management strategy. We're hoping for cold weather to help slow down the development of the disease. But the advent of frosts and snow, especially for prolonged periods, can bring real problems of their own. So we need to be aware of all eventualities, don't we? Because above all else, it's really important not to drop the ball in January, because our passage towards spring is certainly a lot easier without lots of damage to endure, and also then to have to recover.
It is indeed. Very good, Henry. So sounds to me like we've got plenty to discuss in part two.
Yeah, we've got the end of battle two to navigate, and how well we do will determine our approach to the start of battle three. And we will have a good chat about that, won't we? And of course, there's our application tip of the month, Glenn, isn't there? Which you have the honour of doing this month.
I do.
But first, it's tea break time, Glenn, isn't it?
Indeed, and there's plenty to discuss there too.
I'll get the kettle.
Welcome back to part two of January on the Horizon.
Thanks, Glenn. But do you know, I really don't go anywhere. I've been sat here all along.
I know, Henry. I was talking to the listeners.
The listeners, Glenn? What? Are you sure?
Yes, Henry. They're out there. Honest. But before we discuss things in a bit more detail in part two, it's time for a tea break.
It is, Glenn. And after last month's tea break, you want this one to be more sensible, don't you? With talk about what's going on at BTME and all that.
I do, Henry. I just think for everyone's sake, it's really important that we recalibrate this section.
Yeah. If you insist, Glenn. I thought I heard the lone listener booing there, Glenn, in the background. So, Glenn, are you looking forward to BTME?
Yes, I am. It's a chance to meet up with old friends, catch up over a beer and talk turf to the early hours of the morning. Mm. What's not to like? How about you?
Well, I think so, Glenn.
You don't sound too sure.
Well, it's just that I've been to over 30 BTMEs now and I've had a lot of fun over the years, I have to admit. But they've started to seem a bit like Groundhog Day in recent years. Don't get me wrong, Glenn. It is brilliant to see everyone and catch up and have a laugh. But there is an undercurrent about it that's going on that I can't really seem to shake. I think it ties into my I hate parties mindset. But although I won't be looking forward to all aspects of it, I'm sure it will end up brilliant and I'll have a great time. When I get there, you know, seeing all those familiar faces that are another year older and laughing about all the different ways in which age is catching up on us.
You're not a party fan, Henry.
Never have been, Glenn. I think it's the scheduling of a specific time in which to have fun. I find it mildly annoying. They always seem to be a bit pretend.
And you weren't at the show last year, were you? So I'm starting to question whether your COVID infection was actually a bit of a ruse.
Well, no, I genuinely had COVID last year and I was sorry to miss out. And I'm really looking forward to catching up with everyone this year. And of course, hearing the call of listener approaching on the horizon for the first time.
Yeah, I think we should reinstate that this year so you can experience the joy of all three of our listeners winning their On the Horizon badges last year. Let's see if we can up the numbers and see if we can get to four people this year.
Yes, those plate-sized badges. They were a tremendous giveaway, weren't they? Thank you, Kevin. I think I've something in the region of 997 to give away this year.
Have you got anything else lined up for this year, Henry?
Well, yes, I do actually, Glenn. And I am happy to announce to everyone right here, you know, you, me and the three listeners, that I will be, or we will be actually, serving cups of Irish Mindbenders and full-blown Shongbenders at the show for the listeners who might need freshening up.
Great stuff, Henry. I'm assuming they're good for hangovers.
Well, no idea, Glenn, but it can't do any harm, can it, to immerse yourself in a psychedelic kaleidoscope of flavours. I can guarantee that it will be a simple and painless pleasure.
Fair enough. I'm looking forward to sampling those delights myself.
Yes. Well, best to start with the Mindbender, Glenn, because the Shongbender is pretty hardcore and not for the faint-hearted. It even took Ed a while to get used to it, but he's a big fan nowadays.
Well, I saw Ed the other day, actually, yeah. And I was mightily impressed by the amount of hair he's grown on his head. You know, as a follically challenged man, I've got to admit, I was a little jealous of the apparent reversal of his hair loss I've seen in recent times. He seemed well.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. And I've got to admit that is something of a minor miracle, isn't it? And I would think, knowing him, it probably points to him having made a deal with the devil at the crossroads at some point. I'll ask him. But yes, he's on good form. And of course, he is a driving force behind the office tea drinking preoccupation. We're currently digging into the delights of loose leaf tea, Glenn, and of course Chinese tea as well at the moment.
How's that working out for you?
It's rewarding, Glenn, and certainly there's a far greater level of clarity than the tea bags. In fact, Ed can't drink normal tea anymore. He finds it deflating.
Wow. Look. Anyway, it does sound to me like you are looking forward to the show and dragging everyone down to your own tea drinking level.
Elevating them, Glenn, actually. And we will be blending both the On the Horizon infusions using high quality loose leaf tea.
Wow, of course, Henry. I'd expect nothing less.
No. So what about the Syngenta stand, Glenn?
Well, a bit of a new product launch. We'll be sharing some best practice as well for integrated pest management via the form of augmented reality and some anthracnose management tips in the form of a graph. And we'll be working on a high-tech version of our old Tiddlywink disease game, Henry.
Ah, very good. That does sound good. And of course, I knew that I could rely on you to maintain a high level of professionalism and focus that I might be able to in some way associate myself with.
Well, yeah, it's nice to have you tag along occasionally. Yes. And we'll be next to each other in Hall 2 this year. Mm. And I'll bring the Welsh cakes along for our listener approaching. I can't wait to try the Shong Bender with a Welsh cake. All of that game. And that is a truly integrated strategy right there.
Yes. And I think you're ready, Glenn. I really do. Are you doing any presentations this year?
Yeah, I'm doing a couple of presentations this year with Sean. First one is Take the Heat Out of Summer Diseases at the conference on Tuesday. And then another seminar with Sean looking at the future of leather jacket management. Mm. What about yourself?
Yes, I will be associating myself with the professionalism and scientific focus of Dr. Andy Irwin for a workshop on what's in a soil analysis. And we will also be doing a session on the future.
Great. And both subjects that we've covered here a bit as well. Yeah, so. I presume the future of fertiliser session is all about kind of fertiliser product regulations and direction of travel for ICL and the wider industry.
Yes, they will be. And they should both be fun and not as boring as they sound, because Andy is always excellent.
He is indeed. And what about the Syngenta 5K run?
Yes. And what about it, Glenn?
Shall we sign you up?
Best not to, Glenn, to avoid disappointment.
Why not? It's a great event.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, actually, Glenn. It's just that I really don't think I've got the legs for it.
Well, think of us whilst you're supping on your morning brew. I'll be there Wednesday morning outside the Ripon Road entrance, same point as last year's starting point, at 6:30, knees permitting, to drag myself round in both an undignified and humiliating fashion.
Well, that is always good for the soul, Glenn.
But don't forget that everyone who runs Syngenta will donate £10 to the bigger benevolent fund. And we're hoping to get up to £1,000. So we need one extra person because Henry isn't going to join us. So come and join in. It's no fun whatsoever, but it's all for a good cause.
Yeah, well, good man, Glenn. And okay, you've shamed me there. So I think I'll just give a 10.
And think of us whilst you're having breakfast.
Yeah, that's right. It would be £10 well spent. But I've actually got other important things to think about before BTME this January.
What's that then?
Well, at the start of the month, to shake off the New Year's blues, I'm heading over to Galway on the west coast of Ireland. And that was the seed of my greatest night ever, Glenn. Just imagine that. And I'm going to attend the ATPI conference, that being the Association of Turfgrass Professionals Ireland.
Very good, Henry.
Yes, and it is always a good do, actually. I've been there a few times, and so it's something that I am fully looking forward to.
And are you speaking at that one?
Yes, I think myself, Coleman and Fergal have all got speaker slots, being headline sponsors, and it will be great to catch up with everyone and also listen to some great presentations.
I think Dan's going over too, so it'd be a pretty good do.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And I'm also looking forward to drinking some top quality Irish tea blends and stoking up the old Barry's versus Lyons versus Bewley's debate.
Careful, Henry.
No, they're all good, Glenn. That's the thing. And so on thinking about it, there's plenty to be looking forward to in January, as it turns out. And there was absolutely no need for me to resort to flights of fancy or dodgy sound effects.
That is a relief, if I'm being honest.
Yes. Next month, however, is a whole different story.
Well, I'm glad that was pretty sensible, Henry.
Yeah, and why is that, Glenn?
Because in this section, I want to explore two parallel dimensions.
Oh, very good, Glenn. I can see that you're starting to get the hang of this thing, aren't you? Although you told me that my dip into time travel last month was a step too far.
It was, Henry, and I think we would all agree. But I see exploring alternative future dimensions as a much safer alternative. Yeah. You know, there's just less chance of bumping into you-know-who.
Anyway, aren't we supposed to be talking about microdochium patch disease and our integrated management strategies and the end of Battle 2 and the start of Battle 3 in our ongoing war against microdochium patch disease?
Yes, and once we reach the third battle, which is highly likely in January, then our challenges and our approaches become very different depending on what happened from August through to mid-January, or as I like to call it, the first and the second battle.
Okay, Glenn, but before we go any further, I think you're going to have to remind us all about the first and second battles and when they start and finish.
Okay, well, the first battle against microdochium patch is roughly August to the middle of October. The disease is active, but so is growth. So we can get some spikes in activity and we can get some good recovery. You know, during this period, we want to target specific events such as renovations or really high disease pressure periods with fungicides and rely on our slow it down practices like fertility and iron. And during this period, the fungicides we apply are fairly short-lived, but they can be really, really effective when targeted correctly.
Okay, so that's early autumn. What about the second battle?
Well, the second battle is when we move into the next cooler period, that more transitional period, kind of mid-October until the cold weather arrives, hopefully early January for us. You know, and in that battle too, the disease pressure slows down a little, but it is much more consistent. It's pretty much there every day in some form. But growth also slows down too. So it's little and often microdochium patch disease attacks. And battle two is tough because during this period, leaf wetness has ramped right up. Temperatures are perfect to enable microdochium patch to thrive. And to survive this, we need to be really, really focused on lots of slow it down strategies, and our fungicide should be applied sandwiched in between those slow it down strategies at appropriate intervals to ensure good control. Fresh disease attacks are a regular occurrence and recovery is now slow. Most people around the country, their strategies are pretty much the same through battle one and battle two. The start and stop date may be a little bit different for people, but their strategies are generally pretty similar.
Okay, so we've hopefully scrapped our way through battles one and two, and no doubt we'll probably be a bit scarred by it ourselves. But what does success look like, Glenn, you know, for the turf at the end of battles one and two?
Well, success is good levels of turf density, full turf cover. It's inevitable that we're going to see some signs of disease activity during this period, and the objective isn't to avoid disease completely. It's simply to get to the third battle, to get past Christmas or into mid-January when that cold weather arrives, with all of our turf intact. Some thinning is acceptable as long as we can still provide a decent putting surface. But we do need to make sure we got enough turf coverage there, but when spring arrives or we start getting those warm waves, we get quick recovery. If we need significant recovery at this time of year, then the growing conditions have pretty much disappeared, and we're not guaranteed them consistently until June.
Yeah, because, you know, battle three, of course, is the long run through to spring with generally lower disease pressure, but also only intermittent or unreliable and relatively small pulses of recovery growth.
Yeah, that's right, Henry. We can't rely on consistent growth during battle three, not until we reach the end of May or the start of June. And so we try to enter this period with as little damage as possible, because battle three can really drag on.
Okay, Glenn. Well, so very good. And now I am ready to be transported into those alternate dimensions that you promised.
Well, Henry, let me summon the first portal.
Wow, is that Tai Chi that you're doing there, Glenn? Or are you fending off a wasp? Whoa! Now that is impressive, Glenn. You seem to have mustered up a luminous blue whirlpool that I assume you want me to walk through in order to illustrate an important agronomic point in an imaginative way.
I do, Henry. Follow me.
Good man, Glenn, and happy to oblige. Whoa, Glenn, you didn't tell me that it would tickle. Anyway, where are we?
It's a golf course, Henry.
Oh, yeah, of course it is. Yeah, I was just a bit flustered. Well, anyways, isn't it? It's very nice here, isn't it? It's a parkland setting, and it's a crisp winter's morning. And the atmosphere, it feels light. And there's this lovely feeling of serenity and calm. And look, over there, I can see the greenkeepers smiling. And they're chatting with the golfers. And the golfers, they've got smiles on their faces. And they're enjoying their golf. Wow, Glenn, this is absolutely great.
We must be in the agronomic winner's dimension, Henry.
Ah.
This is where the first and the second battles were won.
But we can't be, Glenn, because I can see the greens and there's definitely a bit of scarring on them.
Yes, but winning the first and second battles isn't about avoiding disease completely. It's about retaining turf integrity. You know, enough integrity so that the damage will recover quickly once we experience a short wave of growing temperatures. And look, these disease scars, they're not large ones, Henry, and there's plenty of grass cover in there. Mm. Disease has come, as it was bound to, but then it's been slowed down. Its development has been slowed down, and then it was zeroed out with good fungicide timings. You know, all of that helped reduce populations,
yeah.
And there's no evidence at all of disease re-attacking the same angry Microdochium patch scars.
Yes, you're right. And it's nice and sunny, Glenn, isn't it? But it's still chilly at this time, isn't it? But there's plenty of dew there after what must have been a light frost. So what do you think? Do you think we'll see any disease flare-ups in the next few weeks?
Possibly. Our slow-it-down strategies have to continue in this dimension. They're really important still. But those zero-out fungicide applications, they become less necessary over here. You know, if that weather stays cool, which it's likely to, the opportunity for disease development now really slows. If we keep our leaf wetness management strategies in place, we can now stay pretty clean with minimal fungicide applications until the warmer weather comes.
Mm.
And those waves of warmer weather, they will start to roll in soon, gently at first, and that will help us just build some plant health and get some density back where we need it.
Mm. Yeah, but we still have to be on our toes, don't we? You know, but the golfers seem happy enough, don't they? Because the surfaces are still pretty good.
Yeah, greens growth has dropped right off now, so we can create some pretty smooth and quick greens very easily.
Mm.
And that keeps the golfers smiling. In fact, the smart course managers in this dimension are lifting those cutting heights at this time of year because they have consistent coverage.
Yeah, but let's not get giddy and start thinking that we've got it cracked and get everyone all hyped up with unrealistic expectations. We just need to keep this ticking over for now, don't we? Nice and comfortable and keeping an eye on the horizon at all times.
That's right, you know. We have to be so careful not to create an unfair expectation for the members. You know, I used to hate the phrase, wow, greens are great in January. Imagine what they're going to be like in summer. It was just a red rag to a bull to me to try and outperform that later in the year. And greens at this time of year in this dimension can be excellent. But we've got to keep an eye on the ball to make sure we don't lose it.
So, Glenn, in this imaginary dimension,
it's not imaginary, Henry. This is a real place, and it's within touching distance for most people now. Hold on, you can get here.
Okay, Glenn. So we've won battles one and two. We have good coverage, and we can approach battle three in a fairly relaxed and stress-free manner. We can lift cutting heights a little if we want and focus on producing smooth putting surfaces. And we don't have to reach for any additional fertilizer at this stage to recover the damage.
Simple, Henry. Mm. But we can't stay here for much longer. We have to go now.
Okay.
These portals, they don't stay open for long, and this one's beginning to close.
Okay, Glenn. But I do like this place. It's an agronomic heaven.
Yeah, I like it too, Henry. This is where I like to visit. Mm. And I'd love to be trapped here, but there's another dimension that I need to show you.
Okay, Glenn. I think I know where we're headed. And does this portal tickle every time you go through it, Glenn?
Only if you let it, Henry.
Okay, here we go. Whoa, I think something bit me there, Glenn. God, I'm really not sure about this one, Glenn. This is horrible.
It's okay, Henry. It's not a nice place, but many, many greenkeepers survive here. This is where the people who lose the early battles go, Henry.
Yeah, the greens are shot to pieces, Glenn. They're scarred and uneven. The ball is bobbling and snaking around. For reference, at best a 4 on the SGRI smoothness scale, which is not good. And there are angry golfers everywhere. They're not replacing divots. They are not repairing their pitch marks. And they are blaming the greenkeepers for their terrible golf, Glenn.
They're cross, Henry. They've lost complete perspective.
And where's the course manager?
They're in the clubhouse or the office, Henry, you know, explaining what's going on. They're spending their time repeating what's happened, you know. It's a kind of purgatory. Ooh. They're talking to members about how fungicides don't work anymore and trying to keep doubtful golfers on board. It's a tough place to be, and generally this is renewals time as well. And, you know, if they're not in the clubhouse talking to the membership, they're hiding in the back of their yard. Mm. You know, and the greenkeepers are hiding from them too.
Yeah, it is a depressing place, Glenn. I've been here before. I've actually been called in here before. Mm. And, you know, I wouldn't wish it on anyone, I've got to say.
No, it's very depressing, Henry, but it doesn't last forever. The skies do clear.
I know, Glenn, but when?
Well, it might be the end of May or it could be early June. The people who get trapped in this place usually appear on Twitter again, you know, about June to start showing people how good their greens are.
Yeah, but that's 5 months away, Glenn.
Yeah, it is. The next 4 to 5 months in this dimension can be very painful.
Yeah. OK, well, let's have a quick look round then. OK, so there's disease scars here too, Glenn, but there's far more of them and they are way worse.
Yeah, they're a stage on from the other place though, Henry. Here we have lost turf integrity. They've seen disease come and go repeatedly as the pressure has rolled in and out over the last 4 or 5 months. You know, and they've kind of led with a belief that disease will simply grow itself out.
Yeah, but consistent growth has been declining since October, Glenn. So how does this happen?
Well, missed opportunities, lack of budget, inexperience, a bit of bad luck. Mm. Lots of reasons why people end up here. Mm. And here's the problem, Henry. Look at that disease scar. You can read it like the rings in a tree. If you look in the centre of that dead ring down there, have a look.
Yeah, I got it. There's grass in the centre.
That was the centre of the infection back in Battle 1 last August. You know, because of growth we had back then, that centre point, that has recovered.
Yeah, but then there's a circle of bare ground for what is it like, I don't know, 3 to 4 inches around that central bit. And then there's an infected ring on the outside of that.
Yeah, that's right. The dead area is the infection spreading during battle too. Sometimes we get recovery, sometimes we don't. Recovery becomes less likely the longer we go on.
Yeah, and the outside infected ring?
Well, that's where we've got such a high spore population because it's been allowed to run away during Battle 2 that even though we now have much cooler temperatures, because we've got high leaf wetness and a high pathogen population, we've still got plenty of opportunities for that disease to keep moving on.
Yeah, and the surfaces are so pitted and uneven. This is going to be a really tough run through to spring.
Yeah, and we need to try and help them out. This is a place where people can end up, you know, through no fault of their own.
Okay, so what's the plan, Glenn?
Well, we're waiting for significant growth, which is very much in the hands of the weather, but we can help.
Okay, so what do you think we should start with?
Well, look, if we're here, we need to place more of a focus on fungicides. Medallion on tighter windows will help reduce that spore population now. It won't completely control the pressure. It can't bring back dead turf back to life. but it will help to slow down any further onslaughts. Mm. Attention must now also be placed on those slow it down strategies. Mm. We have to remain really focused on smooth surfaces as well to try and keep the customer on board. You know, many people in this dimension will keep the cutting heights low to help them have a decent putting surface. Mm. They'll rely on rollers to keep those surfaces smooth. Mm. It's none of that's great agronomically, but in this dimension, it's necessary. Yeah. And I'm particularly interested in your views whilst we're here on fertiliser, Henry. What can we do in this place to try and help us gain quicker recovery?
Well, you know, the milder winters that we've experienced in recent years can actually help us during Battle 3, can't they? And if we get lucky, then there might be some opportunities for some recovery growth in February and March. They'll be short, but we need to be alive to them and maybe be ready to move with an appropriate fertiliser if we see our chance. Andy actually did a trial on this very subject at ISTE with Mark in Ireland a few years back on plots that were affected by over 20% disease cover in January. Those plots had completely lost the battles 1 and 2. But with an application of Green Master ProLite Invigorator Plus, 4014 plus FE, it was either February or March, and the nitrogen in the Invigorator Plus comes from sulfate of ammonia, they'd pretty much fully recovered by April. Whereas the untreated controlled plots that were at the same level of disease at the time got worse and worse and ended up at 35% disease cover just in time for the Masters, which was not great. So simple measures really can work, and actually not doing anything can be a disaster. But it was one of those mild winters, but it shows that, you know, you can take your chances if they come along, you know, and you do need to realize that you might be able to get a positive response if the weather breaks for you. It wasn't actually that unusual compared to the recent winters that we tend to experience these days, so we can do something to get out of this place if we keep our eyes on the horizon and know our way round the fertilizer technologies. And I should say that I'm not sure that all fertilizers applied in this situation would have generated such a positive response. But anyway, Glenn, have we seen enough here?
Look, it's not a nice place to be, is it, Henry? No. It really reduces your maintenance options, your members lose faith, and it's a good third of the year that you could be trapped in here.
Yeah, but it's not endless, and there are things that you can do, and we will no doubt talk about all those things as we go through the next few months. So shall we go now, Glenn?
Good idea. I can see that portal beginning to close, Henry. Quick, Henry, get out!
Whoa, why have I got a feather in my ear, Glenn? Anyway, that was a good idea, and I know where I'd rather be going into that final battle.
Yeah, absolutely. The agronomic winner's dimension. You can back off on cutting heights. You can use nutrition as you wish. You can relax a little and keep golfers happy.
Yeah, but don't worry if you get stuck in that dark place, because you can manage your way out. It's slow, but it can be done.
Yeah, and recognise it for what it is. You know, try to build more robust plans for the following season. Keep communication with the club going about the challenges you see, and look honestly at your programmes to see what you can do to improve.
Yeah, the dark place needs more fungicides, probably with less results, more fertilisers, more taking of liberties just to maintain a surface. But it can be avoided, can't it, with a bit of luck and some good judgment.
Yes, but year on year, with changes in fungicide technology and a warming climate, avoiding it becomes harder and harder. But we're here to help.
Yes, it's an easy track to fall into, Glenn, isn't it? But if you're listening to this in December and your greens are in good condition, then hold on, because you're nearly there. Let's not slip into that wrong dimension at this late stage.
Right, here we are. Application tip of the month time, Henry.
Great.
Yeah, and it's going to be a quick one this month.
Oh, even better.
Absolutely. So January is a good time to do a bit of machinery servicing and a thorough inspection of your sprayer. And this is an important part of the process.
Yes, because the condition of your spray equipment is vitally important.
Now, the thing I want you to think about this month and have a look at is paying particular attention to your sprayer's hoses. Now, of course, they should be checked as part of your pre-start checks every time it goes out. But if they have been missed, then now is the time to give them a damn good looking over. Now, what I want you to pay particular attention to is hoses that move. You know, the ones on the folding parts of the booms, the ones that kink and straighten over and over and over again. And I want you to look really, really closely at those ones around the pump and the PTO shaft as well. And I would bet good money if your sprayer is more than 2 years old and you haven't checked it properly and correctly on a regular basis, then you will find worn or damaged hoses around those moving parts. Now's the time to get them sorted. If it's January and it's a bit cooler, you've got February when things are cooler, there's less of a priority on hitting those spray days. So you've got a bit of time to get those hoses off, get them refitted. Because each one of those that's worn, damaged, increases the chance of a dangerous leak or a burst, which is not only potentially damaging to turf, but it means higher levels of exposure to an operator. And it also means that sprayer is going to be down probably at a critical time of the year when you will be relying on using all the spray windows you've got. And it can be avoided with a good check. So once you're done listening to this podcast, first thing you should do as you walk past your sprayer, just have a check of all of those moving hoses.
Very good, Ben. And thanks for that. A good, timely and practical tip. So that's it for the month, Glenn. January is looming and it's a vital time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And we need to get into and then through January in good shape. And so we just can't take our eye off the ball at this time of year.
Yeah, let's keep going and try to set up an easier run through to spring. But it's never actually easy, is it, Glenn?
It never is, Henry. Look, goodbye, everyone, and catch up with you at BTME.
Listener approaching, Glenn.
On the horizon.